What's going on? Thanks for coming here and listening to the bonus story. You will not be disappointed because this was an incredible conversation. It kind of just organically formed while we were having the discussion, and it became very clear to me that this was supposed to be its own section of the interview. So that's what it is. It's about performance magic, but there's also another encounter at the end, which is very interesting to me, and I think it'll be to you too. So I don't want to talk too much. As always, I'll just leave it here. And we'll just get into this part of the conversation with Brother Matthew. So when you talked about your, I guess, powers, I don't know if that's how you said it, but your abilities exploding after that encounter with the Norse god, what do you mean by that? And how would you use that in day-to-day life? Like, what's the point of having these powers?
Please understand, and also for any listeners listening in, when I'm talking about these things, I in no way, shape, or form am I saying any of this stuff is bragging. I grieve over this. I'm just saying these things that this is what happened, that this is what the Lord delivered me from. I give him all the praise for saving me from this, and anything I talk about this stuff is just to describe what the Lord overcame, because there's no power but of God. The Lord is truly King. Lord Jesus Christ is truly God, is truly King. He is the Lord, and there is none else. But this is what I was. This is what he saved. I was a Gadarene demoniac. I was an evil, wicked son of the devil. That is what I was. I was a blasphemer, vulgar, foul-mouthed, angry devil is all I was. But you ask the question, you know, how would this kind of stuff work? Well, again, the point is I had really built up in my mind the picture of Merlin, and I wanted to be a modern world Merlin. That I wanted that more than anything, and so I started working on being a grandmaster of Merlinian wizardry, elemental magic. Now, for example, there was one time I was working as the security guard at the resort, and it was the end of the night. Our job as security guards was to escort all the people off the resort down to the taxi stand to get them taxis so they could get home. Now, this is like 3-4 in the morning, right? Now, this is a weekend. I was tired. I was sore from being on my feet all day. It was a long shift. I wanted to go home. I was tired, and all these people were just irritating me to no end. I wanted them gone, but they were just taking too long. They were goofing around. They weren't listening. They weren't getting the cabs, and I just want to go home. And so I'm thinking, okay, what can I do? And so it had just rained a little bit, and I turned around. I saw there's a puddle behind me, and I mean, oh. Yes. So I said, okay, I'm going to do a weather spell. And because to do weather spells, to affect a certain element, you have to have a certain element at hand. And so there's water right there. So I turned my back and I walked away from my post and all the people there. And I stood over this puddle and I used the water and I, using different pentagram arts and such in a certain ritual that I did, I conjured a microburst. And I turned, because there's a mountain behind us that the resort is built on. And I turn around and I wait. And I'm staring. I'm just glaring at the clouds. I'm just waiting. And they started turning and building. And this black cloud just came over the mountain. And a microburst just dumped on. And everyone just scattered for the cars. Everybody just left for the hotels. And it was all gone. And we just were able to get in our stuff and go home. Summoned a crazy microburst storm.
I know that you've watched the testimony that I had with Bill Sneblin, and he talks about controlling the weather. So this is something that I've also heard. It was hard for me to understand, but when you look at the Bible, there is a place, and I know you're aware of this because I've heard you talk about this before, when the apostles and Jesus are on the sea and there's a big storm and they're afraid. If you look into, that's New Testament, so it would be the Greek. One way to translate that would also be accurate is to exorcise the storm out. Mm-hmm. So there's a biblical precedent for these kinds of things, which I thought was interesting. In terms of like the abilities that you had, I've also heard you talk about magic tricks that you would do. Do you mind touching on that a little bit?
I dabbled a little bit in street magic, performer magic, for the purpose of getting myself used to and more comfortable with doing my magic stuff in public. Because again, most of what I was doing was just with fellow practitioners or behind closed doors. But I wanted to become public. I wanted to take black magic public. This is what I wanted to do. So to get myself used to this, I started learning just how to be comfortable in other people's presence or looking at it. So I started with simple things, technical stuff like card tricks. It's a sleight of hand. Just learning how to just be comfortable in other people's presence. So I started doing some of that, coin tricks, card tricks and stuff, and then getting used to that, getting more comfortable. And then I started bringing in other stuff where I could make objects disappear right in front of their eyes. And but made it look like it was just simple, street magic. Because I became a big fans of David Blaine, David Copperfield, Dynamo, and a lot of those kinds of guys, where, for example, Dynamo, David Blaine, and David Copperfield are real. People will mock me for this, and I don't care. I know what they're doing. David Copperfield, David Blaine, and Dynamo are real world Janes and Jambres. It's not smoke and mirrors. Most of what they're doing is real world black magic in person.
I actually was going to ask you about this. That was my next question.
Yeah.
If you had ever seen like well-known magicians use some of this stuff. So you have seen that on
Oh
TV or
boy.
whatever.
Like there are many times, like for example, I was sitting on the couch and we'll pull up a YouTube video or whatever, and I'll see some like of David Blaine doing this, and I'm like, oh, I know what he's doing. You have to do this, and it'll do that. I'm like, I know exactly what he's doing. Yes, some of the stuff he does is just technical sleight of hand, smoke and mirrors kind of thing. But for example, David Copperfield is one of the world's leading experts and what's it called? Holder of the largest occult museum in the world. He has the largest occult collection, one of the largest occult collections in the world, David Copperfield. He knows what he's doing. Levitation, that's real. I could levitate. I remember walking down the hall and I was working, doing one of my foot patrols. And I'm think in my mind, I'm thinking there's certain rituals, different things. And I'm walking with a friend of mine. And as I'm walking, I felt weird. Well, what's this going? And I look down, my feet are just a few inches off the floor. And he doesn't see it. And I'm walking beside him, he doesn't see it. And then I came down, and my legs felt like jello just for a second. And then I just kept walking. Something had picked me up just a little bit as I'm moving. Levitation's real. Yes, there's Hindu gurus that are known to levitate over 90 feet in the air, flying around. In Brujeria witchcraft down in Mexico, there are witches that are known to be able to fly through the air. There are shamans in Africa that are able to float and fly around. Jamaica, there are voodoo priests that can levitate and fly. It's 100% real. No, this kind of stuff. It's very, very, very real. But again, this is stuff that it's not just a hobby. It's not just a joke. It's not just something light. This is real, and it's when you cross the line and you become a servant of spirits knowingly is when it just takes off. Is when it just takes off. Because if you still keep holding it to yourself, it's just you, it's all this, you're only going to get to a certain point. But it's when you actually understand it and it becomes your religion, your life, and it's the spirits of the stuff, then it starts taking off. It becomes an absolute horror show for many people. Getting to that level has an extremely high rate of mental breaks and insanity. There are so many people when they can't accept the spirit side of it. When they start manifesting, showing, people go insane. You wouldn't believe the amount of practitioners that wind up in institutions. completely broken. Because they just, they can't handle it. They completely break. Somehow I just was so comfortable with the whole aspect of it. It didn't bother me that way. It wasn't until afterwards there's something else that went on that really bothered me. And I wound up almost having a mental break after I got saved. It was just that the whole shock of everything is what almost broke me. But many of the stories in the lore that you hear are real, based in reality, a lot of it.
I remember being a kid, and I think his name is Chris Angel, but it's been a very long time. But I remember seeing his stuff, and some of the things, it's like, oh, it makes sense that it's sleight of hand, and you could see the tricks. Some other stuff, I was like, how do you do that? And I don't know, I have no idea. Personally, I've never been engaged in any of these things, so I don't know if he was actually doing sleight of hand, if he has really good tricks, or if anything else. But I've always been curious about some of these things. Like, some of them don't seem to be possible to fake, but that's also the whole point of sleight of hand at the same time.
Would you like a little nugget? Chris Angel was about 99.9% smoke and mirrors and sleight of hand.
Okay, but not 100.
A lot of his stuff, not 100, but a lot of his stuff was camera trick.
That would make sense. But I'm not so shocked by you saying that. I'm more shocked by you saying 99.9.
There were some things, some little things here and there. It's like, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing. You can't fool me. And it's like some other stuff, I'm like, wait a minute, that's stupid. What did you do? And then you start looking into like, oh, give me a break. And it's just, you realize, you know, it's just the camera trickery or sleight of hand or something else, but different things he was doing. But yeah, but there was the odd thing, the odd little nugget here and there. I'm like, okay, I caught that. I caught that. As a lot of magicians, what they'll do is they'll throw a little thing in for practitioners.
Hmm.
But it's a little thing. It's like, oh, like Easter eggs in a movie or a show like that. It's like Easter eggs in your performance. So practitioners are like, I see what you're doing. I see what you're about. Like David Blaine, a big one is, he has the Egyptian eye on his hand. He has certain other words, certain little things he does, or he'll drop, or in his conversation, he'll drop a little word here or there. It's a kind of Easter egg leading you along to, oh, I see what he's doing, what he's leading up to. A lot of them do that. Drop little practitioner Easter eggs, you could call it.
Yeah. Like I said, the 99.9% is the part that's shocking. Because I would have, before having known of you and listening to you talk, I would have assumed that it was 100%, you know, fakery, just really done well. But knowing that these are things that are possible, it does make sense of some of these things. Before we move forward in the story, I want to go back a little bit, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. Because there's an encounter that you had that we haven't talked about. It seemed to be important. So it was an encounter you had with an Egyptian god, and I'm pretty sure we haven't talked about it. So do you mind just sharing that story?
Yeah. That was when I was... really wanting to become more serious in what I call not witchcraft. I didn't want to call it witchcraft, but it was a lot of the witchcraft stuff and the occultic arts and stuff. I really wanted to get serious into it, but I didn't quite know how to go about this. I needed the understanding, and I was in bed and I was, my wife's asleep beside me, and I'm trying to sleep. It's like, so I just, I, you know, when you're in bed, you want to sleep, but it's like, you can't sleep. It's almost like you had a cup of coffee before, and I'm trying to make myself tired. I want to go to sleep. And I remember I'm laying there, and then all of a sudden, I was somewhere else. Now, how to explain that these visions, it was like a vision, but not a vision. It's like you close your eyes, but you open them somewhere else. And it was real beyond real. Everything around, you could feel it. You could smell it. You could touch it. It was real. And I remember standing there. I don't know where I was. Many will call it the astral plane. But it didn't feel like an out-of-body experience. And anyways, I'm standing there, and there's this pyramid, larger than anything I could possibly describe. And I'm standing there just like, what in the world is this? And then I turn and I see this being. Now, it's the Egyptian god Thoth. He's the ibis bird-headed creature. He's the holder of the gold, of the emerald tablets of wisdom, of magic and occultism. He's the holder of the magic arts. And he's standing there, and he's got his tablets here. And I'm looking at him, it's like, I'm completely frozen. I don't know what's going on. And it speaks to me, again, here in my head, that offering me the wisdom of the tablets, offering me this stuff. And he just kind of just lays it out. Do you want this? Because this is what you're looking into. This is what I'm offering. Do you want this? And it's as simple as that, just a simple offer. But something in me, it's like, this is weird. This is very weird. And so I'm like, okay, I gotta kind of think about this. And it just stands there. I'm like, okay, I'm going to think about this. I need to think. And so I go for a walk. And I walk around the pyramid. I have no idea how long it took because time is different on the plane, different plane. I get back and I just look at him like, I do want it. I do want this. It's like, okay. And I just snapped out of it and I'm back in my bed. But that's when abilities and things started coming to me, and the knowledge of how things got the easy access. I was able to find the things I wanted really easy. Everything started coming to me fairly easily. That's when that really took off. But that was one of the it's called the lower gods. That's what they're called. I had gotten their attention by my determination is how that happened.
Did you know that was an Egyptian god at the time?
Yes.
This is what I'm curious about. I don't know how well or how far along your unchristianization you were, but in the Bible, the Egyptian gods specifically are railed against. Mm-hmm. Did you know that? How did you make sense of that?
I felt nothing about that. That didn't bother me. Like, okay. It's like I'm aware of that in the Bible, but in my mind, it was more of just, let me explain. At what I was falling into and what I got into when I was in my darkest points, I was a polytheistic universalist. That's a mouthful. Polytheist is that all the gods, all of it, they're all real. They all have their heavens and their hells. And which one you go to is the one you convert to. Universal is that everybody goes to their heaven. Everybody goes to their gods. Polytheistic universalism is what I was. So with that is, yeah, God and Jesus, and, you know, the Bible and all that is real. That's that belief system.
Like your truth kind of thing.
Yeah. So what it was, that was in the Bible, that was a battle of the gods, and that some gods are more powerful than others. That's how that works. Just kind of just leave everybody alone, just have your own thing, but you don't want a god off. You don't want a god war, you know, like Mount Carmel. Let's try to avoid that. Let's all try to be at peace, you know, hippie, you know, just everybody have your gods, everybody have your thing. We all go to where we want. That's what I was becoming. So that's why it didn't bother me, because I was very libertarian spiritually in that way.
I think I could be mistaken, but I think that's the paradigm that in the Bible, the, why am I blanking on this? I use this word all the time. the Gentiles, the pagans would, I think that's kind of what they believed. And I think that's the reason why in the plagues of Egypt, God destroys every single one of these gods one by one to show that he is almighty.